Hello and welcome to What the Hack, the show that is dedicated to taking all aspects of cybersecurity and breaking them down into easy to understand bites. My name is Sean, a cybersecurity professional working in the Aberdeen, Scotland area. This week we welcome Roger Grimes from the company KnowBefore. He's the author of 12 books and over 1,000 national magazine articles on computer security, specializing in host security and preventing hacker and malware attacks. Roger is a frequent speaker at national computer security conferences and was a weekly security columnist at InfoWorld and CSO magazines between 2005 and 2019. He has worked for some of the world's largest computer security companies, including Foundstone, McAfee, and Microsoft. Roger is frequently interviewed and quoted in the media, including Newsweek, CNN, NPR, and WSJ. We hope you enjoy. Right, thank you very much, Roger, for joining us on the podcast. As we discussed, we were going to talk about blockchain and cryptocurrency. But before we do all that, we wanted to kind of differentiate what the difference is between blockchain and cryptocurrency. Speaking from a novice point of view, I guess, this is not my area of expertise. I was always under the impression that blockchain was cryptocurrency. But there's obviously major differences here. Can you kind of elaborate on that a little bit?
Yeah, and the reason why they're confused is that when Bitcoin was, you know, created back in the day, it was the first implementation of blockchain. Blockchain had been talked about as a theory, but Bitcoin was the first application that actually implemented it certainly in a popular way and certainly in a peer-to-peer network. So Bitcoin is they call it a currency or an investment vehicle that on its back end has blockchain. And they really are two different things. And blockchain probably is going to have far more widespread use and acceptance and utility than Bitcoin. So blockchain is really this cryptographic way of confirming transactions. At a basic level, you can take a transaction or a block of transactions, put it inside what they call, you know, like a database block or something like that, and then you can cryptographically hash it so you can confirm its integrity in the future. And that hash is actually part of the next block, part of the data that's stored in the next block, and so on and so on, so that you have this linkage of cryptographic hashes that point to the integrity of the previous data block. And unless you have some incredible, unless you either break the crypto or you are able to control 50%, a little bit more than 50% of the blocks or the people that have created the blocks, then it's really difficult to hack. And blockchain is being picked up and used everywhere, but it's kind of funny, like Bitcoin, very overhyped. Mm-hmm. And as a matter of fact, one of my major, I've been writing research and security on blockchain and cryptocurrencies since the beginning, nearly the beginning. And a lot of times people want to use blockchain. They're like, oh, blockchain. You know, it's the way to the future. It's everything. There's entire divisions of blockchain people in different companies. There's forums for blockchain. And blockchain actually is this really great thing. But blockchain is a good way of securing different transactions among different people that are possibly anonymous. So that you can have these anonymous parties. They don't have to be anonymous. It doesn't have to be public. It can be public or private or this or that. But then keeping the integrity of these transactions across all of these people. Well, the thing is, you can actually do that, and we have done that without blockchain. So it didn't take blockchain to do that. But blockchain did it very efficiently. I don't even know if I'm going to say very efficiently. Let me just say it's an effective way of doing it. It became popular. You can use it for a lot of solutions, but it's actually not always the most effective way. It's not always the most efficient way. And it's all like, I used to laugh. I used to publish all the time. They're like, we're going to save the world. We're going to stop food poisoning in the world by implementing blockchain. Are you tired of getting E. coli on your lettuce? You know, we're going to use blockchain. And I used to laugh because I'm like, is there a problem with anonymous people that are corrupting the current E. coli database for the, you know, for the food mm-hmm. management program of the countries? They're like, well, no. I'm like, well, you've just picked a solution you don't have a problem to. But I actually was talking to this one blockchain person who was head of a consortium, brilliant woman. I can't remember her name off the top of my head right now, but she said, you know, Roger, I agree with you that blockchain is not the crypto answer to everything. She goes, but many times people that wouldn't come to us are now coming to us because of blockchain, and we can start that conversation. So she convinced me that blockchain is a really good thing, because you have a lot more people coming to them and say, hey, is blockchain, you know, the solution for us? And you can go, you know, it could be, but here's a better solution. But at least you're getting them to have that encryption, protect data protection discussion that you'd never have before. And then going back to Bitcoin, Bitcoin being a cryptocurrency, the first cryptocurrency, you know, is this, it has on the back end for the transaction ledger, it uses blockchain. And then Bitcoin's probably kind of unique in that you have this, it's one of the few that actually has a real value, if nothing else, tied to the cost of electricity that was used to generate the Bitcoin mining. So you have all these calculations, and it gets harder and harder to do these cryptographic calculations to create these Bitcoins. I think today, you know, you have these, you know, trillions of, you know, it's not trillions of computers, but trillions of GPUs and things that are doing, not trillions, millions, hundreds of millions, that are trying to create new Bitcoin mining. And I think they generate somewhere like 900 new Bitcoins a day. There's 18 million Bitcoins a day. And by 20, that, so the vast majority of Bitcoins have been mined already. It takes a certain amount of work effort from these computers and cost electricity to generate new Bitcoin. And the new, so 18 million have been created. The max that you'll ever have is like 21 million. But it's going to be like 2149 or something like that for those last 2 million. Because every time you mine a Bitcoin, the next one is harder to take. And so Bitcoin is unique. It's one of the first. It's certainly one of the most popular, you know, started by open source software with a blockchain back end. And it's one of the few, like anybody can make a cryptocurrency. You can just make up anything you want. And people have hundreds and thousands, it seems, of cryptocurrencies. You can just make them out of air. Mm-hmm. There's no protection really to preventing from somebody making a new cryptocurrency. But Bitcoin is unique besides being the first, the most valuable, the leader, the most popular. It actually is tied to a unit of value, meaning how much it costs to generate a Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. So that is, you know, the cost of electricity. You have people that are being Bitcoin miners, and the electricity cost goes up and Bitcoin goes down and they stop mining. And then the other way, you had, you know, you have malware people that will spread malware bots so that they can steal resources for free, you know, and generate these Bitcoins, because it takes money to generate Bitcoin. And so there is some some real value behind it. Most cryptocurrencies, it's such what's called fiat currency, nothing really of value behind them. They just make it up. Bitcoin's unique in that it actually has something of value behind it. It actually, the way that it's valued really doesn't track to the cost of electricity, but at least there's something there.
We're going to come on to Bitcoin actually, but I suppose one of the questions that I've got on Bitcoin is when it first came about and was basically invented, people had to mine it. Now perhaps they still do, yeah. So perhaps we can explain what that entails. But I'm also thinking, what was the point of doing that, knowing that at the time it didn't have any value at all? So they mined all this Bitcoin for virtually nothing. It wasn't even tangible.
Yeah, you know, I got in when they released the client. I was actually on a cryptocurrency board, came across it, installed it, and immediately generated 7 Bitcoin that if I could find years later, right, I'd be worth hundreds of thousands of dollars. I'm one of those many, many stories. And every time I upgrade my computers, I take my hard drives and I save them or destroy them. And I went through all my hard drives looking for them and I couldn't find it. So, but mine wasn't locked. A lot of people like have locked them on a USB key, but I just couldn't find it. But, you know, back in the day, for years and years, it was considered nothing. But the whole idea behind Bitcoin, and again, what gives it value that other cryptocurrencies don't have, is that there, you needed to do this mathematical proof to prove that there is Bitcoin and there is a transaction. So that there had to be, not only are you generating, so you're running this open source cryptographic routine to solve for numbers that end up being verified as Bitcoin. Like at the end of a Bitcoin mining, you basically get this number that is easy to validate that it is a valid Bitcoin, but would be very difficult for someone to guess or generate. But you're like, hey, you can go, it's a, you know, I forget the name of it in crypto. I should know it, but the, like a one-way function, like a hash function, you know, like a, like a SHA-1, SHA-2 bcrypt hash, very easy to do one way. But then the effort to get from the hash back to the plain text thing that you hashed, very, very difficult. Same thing with Bitcoin. But it's kind of in the opposite direction. Very difficult to generate the correct number. But once you have the correct number, very simple to verify that it is the correct number. So, you know, that you could, if someone was like, well, so there's all these preset numbers in Bitcoin that determine, so 21 million of them that say that this belongs to a Bitcoin. But if someone was just to make up a number, you could easily verify whether that was a valid number or not because of the way the one-way function and the way that it works. So you actually have to generate them, and sometimes some people get lucky and they generate them before half the work effort is necessary, and then the other people have to do more work effort, 100%. And then there's a jump. Every single Bitcoin makes the next Bitcoin harder to create. The person who created it, we don't know who really created it. There's all kinds of people that have been blamed for being the first person. That person owns at least 5% of the currency of Bitcoin. And if they dumped it, like yeah, I'm a billionaire and I'm going to cash out, it would destroy the value of the currency, because it would be as if someone just took 5% of the global money supply and just went boop and just dumped it in the market. It'd be like having 5% more diamonds, 5% more gold. You ready for the second biggest holder? The FBI.
Really? Okay, that's quite surprising, actually.
The FBI took down the illegal Silk Road operation years ago, right, with the notorious dreaded pirate Roberts or whatever. And doing so, they picked up like 144,000 Bitcoin or something like that. So today, the FBI is worth billions of dollars, and you're like, what are they doing with it? I think in America, like you think they'd have to cash it out and turn it back in or something, but I don't know.
Well, this is it. Yeah, I mean, that's a lot of Bitcoin, actually. I mean, I felt bad for you when you said you lost 7 of them. On that, actually, there was a news story a while ago about a guy in the UK. His name was James Howell, I believe, who misplaced his hard drive. I believe it ended up in landfill, but if he was to ever find it, it'd be worth $280 million. And I think he's still searching for it. So.
Yeah, I helped a guy that lost his, so he had saved his Bitcoin information, they call them wallets or whatever, and he had saved it to a USB key and he'd forgotten the password and he couldn't crack it. I was actually able to put him in touch with a cryptographic expert that specialized in extracting hardware keys off of chips, and that guy successfully got his Bitcoin back, which was kind of cool, but I think he took like 25%. Anytime you store a cryptographic key on a chip, there are literally hundreds of people that can get that chip back. They can do it with an electron microscope at the very least, and literally look, they kind of know where to look and what to look for. But electron microscope, a new one's $1 million, but you can get a used one for $5,000 maybe. And if there's literally open source software, and you can take the crypto chip, a trusted platform module chip, or a smart card chip, put it in the machine and actually pick up the molecules. And there's all kinds of, like, there's an entire subculture, like, for smart card chips, literally entire forums and okay, this is the way that you'd remove the chip from the smart card. This is the way you strip the different layers. Mm-hmm. This is where you put the voltage wires. And this is what the equipment you need to read the changes in the voltage. It's kind of amazing. But you have to assume that if you have your encryption secret on a hardware device and it gets in the hands of a resourceful person, that they're going to be able to break it.
Okay. Okay, I mean, it sounds like an absolute maze to try and figure these things out. Like you said, it's very specialized, I guess would be the word. And there are a handful of people that can actually do these sorts of things. So I guess the question I've got, we've mentioned Bitcoin obviously being the main name in cryptocurrency. I guess the question is to be, why is it actually considered to be so valuable nowadays? Is it the anonymity of it, or what is it exactly?
Well, so it's purely a speculative scam that everybody's bought into. And let me say, anytime you have what's called fiat money means that you have this currency that people have agreed to use in exchange of value. And typical, like even when we use a debit card or we use a check it's not real money. It's just numbers. Like even if in America you buy a house mortgage, it's not like the bank has $200,000 in their bank that all of a sudden, you give them or they give you. it's just some numbers changing in a computer and a couple other people's computers. It's not real money, mm-hmm. but there's this trust that the system is set up and has integrity and honesty and checking and auditing. And so real money, when I, you know, and money, fiat money, you know, it's money not backed by gold or something. You hand it and people trust it. The there's no doubt in my mind that Bitcoin is not really a currency. And, and there's going to be people that slay me. It is a speculative investment that you might as well just be playing poker. And let me say, I make money on Bitcoin. I invest. I invest based upon what I perceive to be going up and going down. And I get in and I get out. I don't get rich, but I report my wins and I've never lost money. And I report my gains to the American IRS so I can pay my taxes on it. I think I'm probably the only person in the world that does that. But it is like it's a speculative bubble. Like it's kind of interesting. Like so, of course, Elon Musk the other day bought $1.5 billion, and that not only made Tesla stock go up, but it made the Bitcoin he just bought go up like 20%, and everybody was in. It isn't like all of a sudden Bitcoin's worth more money. It didn't get anything of value. And again, Bitcoin's one of the few e-currencies, digital currency, actually has some underlying value because electricity it costs to mine them and the resources and computers. But it's overvalued. It's speculative. It goes up and down. And people, it was funny, one of the big Bitcoin CEOs, there was this Bitcoin billionaire that said, hey, Elon Musk, why don't you be the first to convert your balance sheet to Bitcoin, you know, from cash to Bitcoin? And I'm like, that shows you why it isn't really money. Mm-hmm. Because Elon Musk will buy $1.5 billion of Bitcoin as a speculative investment. He will never convert his balance sheet to it because Bitcoin goes up 20% a day, down 20% a day. You cannot have a you can't have one of the largest companies in the world with a balance sheet that goes up and down 20, 30, 40, 50% in a month. You, as a matter of fact, accounting wise, besides all my computer certifications, I'm a CPA, certified public accountant. And the way that you have to account for Bitcoin, if you're a company like Elon Musk, this is wild. They bought $1.5 billion of currency. That goes as it's an investment, speculative investment. It's not cash. It's not anything. They won't let him count it as cash because it's not cash. It's an investment like he did a stock or a bond or something like that. The accounting rules say that it's so speculative that he can never raise the price of that investment till he sells it. And then every time it goes below $1.5 billion, they have to mark it down. So imagine one day, instead of it being at the high, there's this one day dip and it's only worth $1.2 billion. His balance sheet has to now say $1.2 billion. And every time it goes down and goes below that figure, they have to mark it down. Get this, they cannot ever mark it up, even if it was to double or triple on the balance sheet. So the $1.5 billion as an asset on his balance sheet is at the most it will ever be to the day he sells it.
Wow.
And let me say the vast majority of people that accept Bitcoin immediately convert it to cash because it's too speculative. And so I worked at Microsoft for 11 years. You can buy stuff in Bitcoin. There's a lot of companies that will let you buy a car in Bitcoin. They immediately convert it to cash. Because you cannot, as a company, run a business on an asset that changes its value by 20% and 50% over the given course of a year up and down. It is not, it's not really a currency. You can call it a currency. It was invented as a currency. It's so crazy speculative. It is gambling with poker. And let me say, I love it. I love what people are doing. I'm making money off of it. But if you were to say, you know, you have these people like, I'm putting all my assets in there. We're up now. It's up to $47,000 or whatever. If I was y'all, I would sell now. I personally think it's at a high. And you have people, oh, it's going to be $216,000. You have asked the central question, what makes it valuable? Nothing but people's imagination and excitement. Let me say, like Amazon stock, you know, you look at it, what's called PE, price earnings ratio, like the multiples are 5,000. It has no connection with reality. But Amazon at least has physical plant assets, employees, is taking in cash, has trucks, has inventory and products. Bitcoin has nothing. It's all electronic. And like if someone breaks the, I wrote a book called Cryptography Apocalypse about quantum computing and stuff. And quantum computing is going to break a lot of the involved encryption. And when it does, if they don't fix it right, it's going to immediately make it worthless.
Wow.
So, you know, and let me say, we're going to have problems with Visa and banking systems. But like, so the blockchain, most blockchains use what's called symmetric encryption, and they're actually fairly secure against, and let me say, I think the quantum crypto break, where quantum computers are going to break encryption, public key encryption, traditional public key encryption, is either happened or going to happen in the next year or two. But when it happens, anybody that has something protected by asymmetric public-private key, it's immediately going to be broken. Blockchain is almost always what's called symmetric encryption. The key that encrypts it is the same key that decrypts it. Mm-hmm. And quantum computers breaks the key strength in half. But the key sizes used in most blockchains are of sufficient strength that quantum computers are not going to break them. So the blockchains, the ledgers, the transactions that are hashed, they're probably going to stay safe. The problem is everybody's wallet is a public, is protected by a public-private key, which means when that happens, they theoretically will be broken. When Bitcoin clients come out, like when they make new software, here's the new client, they're signed by a public-private key that quantum computers will break. And so when they go, hey, oh my God, quantum computers have broken the encryption, we're gonna send out a new client to tell you that, so it will have, so we'll use what's called post-quantum cryptography, or cryptography that's resistant to quantum computing. You can't trust that message. The entire system was built upon a public-private key that now could be compromised, and you could have a bad actor that sends out a known malicious client. So, and we don't think it will happen, but there's a, once the quantum computers breaks public-private key encryption, the traditional stuff, the idea is you need to move people to post-quantum stuff. Well, that's not happening at Bitcoin yet. That's not happening. All, the vast majority of cryptocurrencies are using quantum susceptible encryption. Again, not for the blockchain. The blockchain is solid. It's the, everybody that writes transactions, their wallets are almost always protected by public-private key cryptography. The blockchain is solid, but the clients that read and write the transactions, I'm buying or I'm selling this currency, are protected by quantum susceptible keys. And if someone breaks your key, they could just, they could take your $1 billion of Bitcoin like that. They could say, oh, I'm going to fake a transaction, I'm selling it to that guy over there. It's anonymous transactions. Done.
Wow. Yeah, you, that's the thing. It's incredibly anonymous. I mean, it's often used from an outside perspective. Like I said, I've got very little knowledge and experience with cryptocurrency. But from an outside perspective, what I see cryptocurrency like Bitcoin being used for is illegal transactions, effectively. It's used on, you know, the dark net, that kind of thing. My question becomes, if Bitcoin
started that way,
it started that way.
I would say the majority of transactions are probably still legitimate, but keep going today. Okay. But there's still a lot of bad stuff, and it has so much bad stuff the governments are not going to stand for.
No, that's not a problem. I mean, it's, yeah, like you say, it's used for legitimate purposes now, but effectively not in the long term, because like you said, they transfer it over to cash almost immediately. So my question becomes now is, Bitcoin has got value to it, but what would be the point of having all of the other cryptocurrencies? I mean, you have, rattle off a list here, you've got Litecoin, Namecoin, Peercoin, Primecoin, Gridcoin, all of these different cryptocurrencies that seem to be built on the same idea. So why would we need more than one?
You know, I don't know, other than I think it's a hedge. It's a so they're very, it's a hedge against risk. Or like, you know, like I'm a big believer in CRISPR technology. That's gene editing technologies. And I invest in a company called CRISPR, the stock symbol. And man, I'm up. I'm doing quite well. I'm quite excited. But also because I was worried about, well, something could happen to that company. So I invested in their two biggest competitors as well. And what I noticed is that when CRISPR goes up or down, the other two do in lockstep.
Okay.
But so it's kind of a hedge for me. It's a hedge for me that if this one company has a problem, bad management, their patents get invalidated, they end up killing kids, maybe these other two don't have the thing that kills kids. So I think, you know, when people are buying these other cryptocurrencies, they're really, you're still riding, they're definitely riding the coattails of Bitcoin in popularity. And when Bitcoin goes up and down, they go up and down, but there is some disconnection from it. They're and they all operate differently. Like, you know, Bitcoin is very decentralized, and then there's centralized models. And then Bitcoin, you have arguments between, so like, I kind of laugh because the euphoria around Bitcoin is like, it's anonymous, Well, I guess until the feds decide to follow you, and then somehow they seem to catch a lot of these anonymous people. Then number two, they're like, well, and it's cheap transactions. Forget those stupid banks and global things trying to take your, the SWIFT network trying to take a cut of your money. Have you ever tried to buy cryptocurrency and put your cash into it and maybe take some cash out? It's like $25 a transaction fee.
Wow.
I would never allow my bank or ATM to do that. But people are like, oh, I get Bitcoin at an ATM. I guarantee you, you don't do it for $1.50 like you could for cash. Like, so this whole panacea, or this whole, I'm using the wrong word, but you know, that it's cheap and it's anonymous and all this stuff is kind of funny there. But you know, so some of those, oh, and then the people that, there, no one controls Bitcoin except for maybe the people that have the largest amounts and everybody decides where it goes. They often frequently disagree and then they fork. And a fork is a fork in the code, new numbers. And it is you can't get people in your own family to agree on anything, much less on Bitcoin. So there's all these forks and it really complicates the whole process. So why do people go to the other currencies? I think it's some people, they're all different models. Some things are based on, you know, coffee. I always see these insane models of what they're going to tie their currency to. So instead of tying it to, you know, electricity or these Bitcoin mining, they tie it to a coffee bean, the cost of coffee beans or something. So you have people just taking, and it's all speculation. It's all gambling. There are no, you know, like, you know, John McAfee says, it's going to 216. This, it was at 10,000. He said it's going to 216,000. It went to 16,000. I was like, all right. Well, it not only didn't do that, it went in the opposite direction down to like 3,000. He was investigated by the FCC for pumping a cryptocurrency without telling people who was being paid to advertise. Honestly, lots of people going to jail. A ton of people going to jail over it. It's not only criminals, there's scam artists in it. And a lot of the people that are buying it, you know, I love it. My daughter got some, one of my daughters, I got three daughters and a son, but one of my daughters bought some or just got it as a tip as a waitress. And she laughed because now it's just, you know, I'm trying to teach you how to invest, right? How to do investment and buy stocks and make sure. And her Bitcoin is just, she's like, Dad, you thought you're smart, but you're not so smart, right? Well, there's nobody that is going to be able to show you, oh yes, it's going to $216,000 and here's my calculation and be right. Mm-hmm. And then somebody's like, well, the stock market goes up and down. It does not usually have 20-30% swings a day 20 times a year. You know, the big swing on the stock market would be 2%, 5%. And people can actually value their balance sheets and income statements in cash. They can, you know, it's all interesting. And I love it. I don't want to say that Bitcoin's a bad thing. It's a good thing. I've used it. I bought it. I make money off of it. I'm glad people love it. Mm-hmm. You know, but there is no sense and reason beyond the cost of electricity for it being valued the way it is. Like when Elon Musk bought it, mm-hmm. it was good for Elon Musk, but I don't know good for anybody else. And I don't, like, he can't even sell his one. He's got the 1.5 billion. He can't sell it all at once without causing the price to plummet because it's a pretty big amount.
Sure.
And, yeah. and that would devalue his investment. So it's going to be interesting to see how he gets out of it. Does he keep it? But, and again, his balance sheet will never go beyond the $1.5 billion till he sells mm-hmm. it. He's a genius. He's got something in mind. I just can't figure. It's an interesting long play. Certainly, he's thinking that it's got to go up, up, up. I really don't see it. I think Elon Musk buying Bitcoin was like the Uber driver telling you to buy Bitcoin. When your Uber driver is telling you to buy something, it's usually a sign that it's about time to get out.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
No, that incredibly interesting. It's a. Like I said earlier, it's an absolute maze, and I don't believe that the average person has any knowledge of or understanding of how it works and how it's valued, anything like that. But like you've just kind of described there, it's valued based on what people will pay for it. And if people are willing, if like Elon Musk, for example, if he gets rid of his, the value ultimately will drop because there's a massive shift there. I'm interested in finding out if he was able to purchase more. So, for example, if he doubled his investment, would the price of it increase? Is it that, I want to say delicate, is it that, yeah, that much of a fragile system?
He made 20% and his own Tesla stock went up, right? So it's actually winning right now, but I think it's the high. And it may go up a little bit more, you could have me on the show in a year. We'll see whether I'm right or not. But I'm pretty good at calling to Bitcoin. I've been making money. I tend to get in, get out mm-hmm. after a big swing, but they say hogs get slaughtered, you know, if you try to be too greedy. So sure. I'm not always super rich, but you know, I, what's funny is I had a relative, I would say the least savvy, least intelligent relative I've ever had, called me and said, should I get in Bitcoin? And this person's never called me for anything. And I've been investing stock for 30 years. But I said, no, I said, listen, you should not get in. There's too much downside risk. I said, if you're interested in investing, you should go buy some index funds, mm-hmm. and you should make sure you put the same, you know, try to put in something every paycheck. I could tell she was fading off, right? Okay. She didn't want to hear my competent business, you know, stock strategy, compound interest, you know, the Warren Buffett ideal of how you should get rich. Mm-hmm. She wanted to buy Bitcoin. And she, when she realized that I wasn't going to tell her how to buy Bitcoin, she was far less interested in me. So that's the dilemma, right? It's the shiny object and people love it. But it's amazing how you said, like, what makes it valuable? Mm-hmm. Indeed.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, it's a shiny, exciting thing. It's still relatively new. The one thing that strikes me about it is it's entirely unregulated. So like you say, it could be up 20, 50% in a day and crash the same amount the very next day. So you've really got to time it right. Do you ever see it becoming, I know it's slightly mainstream, legitimate organizations are still, they are accepting it, but do you ever see it becoming a mainstream currency?
No, not because it's not a currency.
Sure.
It's not. When almost every organization that gets it converts it to cash, like mm-hmm. Tesla may be one of the few, it's not a currency. It's too high and up and down, and people are just going to put up with it. If it ever became even close to mainstream, it would be highly regulated. You know, like the Tinkleboss mm-hmm. twins, which I think the Tinkleboss twins are like the second, third, or fourth largest holder of Bitcoin. They absolutely accept it's going to be regulated. You know why? Because those are sophisticated investors that realize that if it's not regulated, like, you know, like right now, we don't even know who created it. And mm-hmm. that guy owns at least 5% or more of it, that person or group, and he could just dump it. Mm-hmm. The second largest known holder is the FBI.
Yeah.
It's like, who imagine if your country's currency, the second largest holder of that currency, was your secret spy agency? Like, it's insane.
Yeah, there's still a lot of questions to be answered on that one. perhaps we can get into it at some other point, actually, and why the FBI hasn't done anything with it, or who knows what their plan is with it. So it's not going to be a mainstream currency. So I want to jump.
Let me go clear before mm-hmm. I start getting death threats. I think Bitcoin is fun. I think it's a great thing. I've been investing in it for years. I make mm-hmm. money off of it. I just, there is no way it's becoming a mainstream currency. Absolutely no way.
Mm-hmm. Certainly not the way that it stands anyway. Like you say, we could potentially regulate it if we had all the facts. You know, for example, who invented it is probably the biggest question that people want answered. So I want to jump back to blockchain just for a moment, really. That seems to be more of a legit organization and a legit. Am I right in thinking it's used for transactions?
Yeah, here to stay, legitimate, solid, paradigm changing. It was the best thing to come out of Bitcoin.
Okay.
And it's still, you know, the problem is, again, people use it. It's like the word quantum. Probably three-fourths of it. So I wrote a book on quantum computers. I'm a quantum guy. Three-fourths of the times a company is formed or has a product with the name quantum in it, mm-hmm. it has zero to do with quantum. Matter of fact, last year there's a computer security vendor walking around. They were going to computer shows with quantum computers on their back. And I called them up. I said, cannot be a quantum computer. There's no such thing. And they got through describing it to me. I realized it was a fake machine. I said, y'all need to stop doing this. I'm going to out y'all. Everybody was like excited and sent me pictures of a quantum computer. It was a regular computer that just had cables and wires. And anyways, but blockchain is the opposite, is that it is a very solid, reliable, trustworthy, future of the world type transaction or back end. The problem is it's a buzzword and people are throwing and talking it like they like think it solves everything. And it does. It solves a very specific problem, which is it allows you to take anonymous or known people and then with high integrity track the transactions. But let me say, we have a banking system with trillions of dollars in it. We have stock market systems with trillions of dollars, and they, with high integrity, track those transactions, and they didn't use blockchain. But blockchain is even a better technology, and it actually is a very, from a cost perspective, what it takes to ensure that integrity, it actually is kind of expensive. And that's my problem, is that if, when I tell people, tell me why you want to do blockchain, probably 90% of the time, they don't need blockchain. There's, every once in a while, I go, you know what? That's the perfect application for blockchain. But you don't need blockchain to track whether or not someone's being poisoned by E. coli across the planet, you know?
Yeah.
And I always, you know, my hey, or do you have a lot of people lying about these transactions in this database? They're like, well, no. I'm like, well, I don't even know why you would use blockchain, because it's expensive cryptographically to use. Now, with that said, there are just, it's, you know, like you hear about the blockchain smart contracts. Like, I buy a house, you and I buy a house, and within 1 second, all these transactions happen. Everybody, you know, when you buy a house in America, your loan agent, your mortgage agent's getting paid, your real estate agent's getting paid, the escrow agent's getting paid, the title insurance is getting paid. All these people are getting paid. And I think I hear it takes an average of 30 days for them to get their money. Like, but blockchain, we can pay them in 1 second. Well, you don't need blockchain to do that. You could do that with a regular program. It's electricity. It's programming electricity. But the great thing is that the excitement around it is inviting more people to look at how they can do things more effectively and efficiently. And that is a good thing. So blockchain's here to stay. Great thing. It is going to be behind many of the things we do, but it's overused as a buzzword. It's overused as a solution. But it is an effective, good solution when it's put in the right places.
Yeah, it's funny you say that. It is a buzzword. I mean, I was, the first time I heard it, it took me about a month to 6 weeks or so to actually figure out what it meant. People, it's kind of like the quantum word, you know. People throw that around, but do they really understand what it means? I certainly didn't with blockchain. But it sounds to me like blockchain have got an awful lot more uses out of it. And there's the applications of it are effectively limitless. But as you said, it's sort of a luxury thing. It's a solution for something that there is already a solution, albeit blockchain is a better solution, but there is actually nothing wrong with the previous solution.
In many cases, it's not the best solution. Like, you know, what it can do, and I was going to say effectively, it does secure it, but it is not, it's very costly actually to like to verify a transaction and things like that. It takes a lot of computing power to do it. So, most of the time I can find other technologies that are better and faster for that application. Again, maybe 1 out of 10 things do I hear, I go, nope, that blockchain literally improves that solution perfectly. That like you could not have. And one of the things is, if I want anonymous public transactions, blockchain is pretty much almost only is a really effective way to do that, because it's very tough to have true anonymity in a database. You know, like, even if you and I sign up, you know, we get tracked by cookies and stuff like that, but blockchain, you know, could help with that. And it's tough to hack once the transaction's written. But here's the wild thing about blockchain. It doesn't stop the transaction being written from being valid or not. So the transaction that gets written to the blockchain is forever in the blockchain, and you can't remove it. But the biggest problem has never been the integrity of a transaction in the data. It is sometimes. It is sometimes where people are trying to change things. Hey, they're stealing money and I sold this. Most of the time, it's just the writing of illegal or illegitimate transactions, and that's the problem. Well, blockchain, it's like, suppose you say, okay, a lot of fault tolerance is, okay, everything is on this hard drive will be written to this hard drive. All right, fault tolerance. And then you get ransomware here. What happens here? Ransomware, right? So blockchain is, we're going to write the integrity of these transactions. It does nothing to ensure that the transactions were really valid or not. And once they're in there forever. And the vast majority of crime is against, you know, is the writing of an illegal transaction. It's not someone hacked the integrity of a past posted transaction. It's that they just put in a bad transaction. So 99% of the problem is not solved by blockchain. You know? But
Yeah, it seems like a very complicated solution for problems that don't necessarily require it, but it seems to be quite a good thing. Do you think, I suppose the question becomes, what does the future look like in this space? Do you see blockchain becoming a more and more frequently used thing, or is it simply too complicated for various aspects of it?
It's actually... I don't think it's actually not that complicated. I mean, mm-hmm. the first time you're trying to learn how it works, but in the world of database integrity transact, mm-hmm. it's actually very elegant and simple. Okay. It's so simple, but it's still from a cryptographic cost of what it takes to do. So it's a simple thing, but it's costly from a cryptographic mm-hmm. standpoint for what you do. Blockchain is going to be with us forever, and it is going to be very useful in many cases. But again, probably its biggest use is that it attracts people to develop these smart contract solutions that really didn't even need it in the first place, but mm-hmm. we wouldn't have people thinking to do it. I was talking to the president of that the Tampa Bay blockchain consortium near me, and she said, I'm getting like just tons of businesses and tons of people generating all these new ideas. And many times it doesn't need blockchain. She goes, well, we're still coming out with really great, creative projects. Mm-hmm. And let me say another good case for blockchain might be, how about title? In America, when you buy a house, you want to make sure that you have the free ownership. That there's not somebody claiming that they own the house and they weren't paid. It's called title searches. Blockchain would be great for that, because once a transaction's written, it's written forever. Mm-hmm. And so that, and you have all these different owners and people looking. So that actually becomes where blockchain is really, you could look with, you don't need security. You just go, okay, who's owned it? Who owns it now? And mm-hmm. you can follow every transaction back to the creation of the house and the buying of the land to go forward, very easily check it, get your answer. So there are blockchain solutions that are, where blockchain is fantastic. But most of the stuff that blockchain is going to generate is new solutions that really didn't need blockchain in the first place. But for that reason, I love blockchain, because we're getting the benefits of blockchain and then all these other 90% benefits that really didn't need blockchain, but people heard the buzzword and they're getting on it and they're making solutions.
Yeah, people get excited by these new and shiny things. You mentioned that the blockchain is very expensive to operate, for each transaction. Do you see that decreasing?
But there are people that are trying to decrease it. I mean, the simple, so when I say expensive, it's just computationally from a cryptographic perspective, expensive. So like if I create a solution, suppose I create a solution and that solution makes it twice as hard for you to break into this thing. Well, okay, that's good. I spend $1, it takes you $2 to break into it. But if I can make it exponential, mm-hmm. that I go from $1 to $2, but now it costs you $4 or $8 or $16, exponential thing.
Yeah.
So that's where cryptographically it just takes a lot. It's not expensive like money-wise, mm-hmm. although ultimately it would be. It's expensive from a cryptographic computational protection problem.
Yeah.
But there are people that are trying, there's lots of solutions to make it cheaper, better algorithms than the one Bitcoin was using. Or like the most simplest one is when blockchain first came out, they said, write a transaction and then we hash it. Well, now like, let's write 10 transactions, then hash it. So the risk is that I could, you know, there could be this, now I have 10 things that are protected by one hash. So that slightly increases the risk, because all 10 of those things are now with the same hash, mm-hmm. but really that's increasing my effectiveness. So I've decreased my computational needs by just adding more transactions to each block. So people are doing all sorts of things. They're even doing like kind of pointers. So you can use the blockchain to protect a secret key or something like that. Mm-hmm. And then points some data point out here. So there's some really creative ways that people are making it more efficient. And that's the great thing also about blockchain, is that the future of blockchain is this is going to be faster and better. Mm-hmm. Like the original blockchain was kind of the floor for the worst it could be. And now people are coming up with better ways to make it more efficient. But each one of those more efficient. So remember I said blockchain simple. Yeah. Simple is good for security. Each of these, you know, changes is actually increasing risk a tiny bit. And over time, as you come up, we have this fantastic blockchain that works for the world. And it's going to stop people from being poisoned by E. coli on lettuce. Well, they add all these features, and it's those features that will allow the compromises to happen. You know, it's the complexity versus usability versus feature set problem all over again. We're just repeating it in a new place.
Wow. It's an incredibly complicated thing to try and wrap your head around. Certainly if you're only hearing this for the first time, like a few of our listeners probably are. It seems to me that there's so much more in this space to cover. And it would be fantastic to kind of get you back on maybe in a few months' time to kind of go over these in a little bit more depth and kind of see where things have progressed. As you said, cryptocurrency is incredibly unregulated. It could be worth much more than it is today, or very little by the time we speak again. Who knows? It's an absolute minefield to try and grasp your head. But basically what you were saying is blockchain is the far more legit and better product, and Bitcoin and Litecoin and things like that are just fun to kind of invest with and to kind of see where things go, but to certainly don't make it your mainstream currency.
Yeah, I wouldn't, like, some people have bet the bank on it, right? Mm. You know, people that have bought their entire money in it, or entire money in Tesla stock, right? There's this guy that only bought Tesla stock. Everybody thought he's an idiot. Now he's worth $1 million and he's retiring. It was still a pretty big gamble, right? Because Tesla was running out of money at all times. So I could be wrong, and Bitcoin could be worth double, and it'd be Elon Musk is a genius. I am not. I'm closer to the diver he insulted. I'm not a pedo, I am a nobody, so I don't know why I'm saying it, but I do. People mark this. I think that a year from now, it's going to be worth less than what he bought it, and that's my prediction. Mm-hmm. I think we've hit peak oil. I think we've hit peak Bitcoin somewhere around now, and it's just because there's no real value in it. Yeah. I mean, it can be worth anything. And when people start to use it and see that it costs them $25 to pull it in and out of the ATM, they're going to go, what?
Yeah.
And then if it ever gets used and the governments are going to regulate it, then all the drug runners get out of it, and that decreases the value. I mean, it's an interesting thing. But where is it going to settle? I think it's going to settle $10,000 to $20,000 eventually, something like that. Still pretty good.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's going to be the $50,000 that it is today.
Okay. Well, it'd be interesting to find out where it kind of goes in the next maybe few weeks, few months, even a year from now. Definitely keep an eye on it. If you're certainly up for it in a few months' time, we'll kind of revisit this and see where things are. That pretty much wraps it up for today. I've certainly got to go and research a little bit more into perhaps investing in it. Certainly do it with a little bit of research. Don't just dive in, and certainly don't put all your money into it. That seems to be the takeaway.
Yeah,
absolutely. I mean, it's been incredibly interesting to have this conversation. I really hope that the listeners find real value in it. I certainly have. So I want to thank you for your time again, Roger. We'll perhaps catch up in a few months' time, and see where things lie from there.
Agreed. Thank you. Thanks for having me on, and thanks for everybody for listening. Send all hate mail on this, if I insulted you Bitcoin, to RogerG@KnowBefore.com. Don't bother Sean, he's a nice guy. But I'll take all any death threats or anything you can send to my email address.
I'll be interested to see if you receive any. All right, thanks again, Roger. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Yeah, agreed.
That is all we have for this week. Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed the show, please give it a like and subscribe to hear more from experts around the globe. And head over to opensourceguardian.com for more great content, all targeting the world of cybersecurity. Until next time, remember, it shouldn't be complicated, so we don't make it so.